Happy trails to you until we meet again.
This is Phil Nee, and it's time for us to say happy trails, put our little records away, and have a good community conversation on the morning show. Next, from WRCO-FM in Richland Center, the 9 o'clock update is sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry, a full-service jewelry store in downtown Spring Green, and the Phoenix Center in Richland Center. Family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games. It's currently 52 degrees at 9 o'clock.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A federal judge has blocked the Trump administration from sending any state's National Guard troops to Oregon. The judge saying last night it appears the Trump administration was deliberately trying to circumvent her previous ruling, blocking the Oregon Guard from being deployed. Talks beginning in Egypt today on trying to end the Israel-Hamas war. Talks not beginning in Washington today on trying to end the government shutdown.
The Senate today will try to force another vote on a Republican proposal that does not include any of the Democratic demands, which are to reverse Medicaid cuts and also to extend those expiring Obamacare subsidies so health insurance premiums don't go up for millions of Americans. But at this point, these two sides are still at odds. They are only digging in, and there's no end in sight to this government shutdown.
ABC's Rachel Scott. The Supreme Court opening up its session today with some major rulings expected this term on the expanse of presidential power. Nobel Prize in Medicine handed out today. Nobel Peace Prize handed out on Friday. This is ABC News. Over $253 billion is what data analytics company predicts American consumers will spend on this holiday shopping season. The season, by the way, stretches from November 1st through December 31st. Here's ABC's Chuck Sievertson.
The over $250 billion in holiday spending would be a 5.3% increase over last year, and many discounts are expected, says Adobe Analytics lead insight analyst Vivek Pandia.
Some of the deepest discounts will go as much as 28%. We see that in categories like electronics. But then we're also anticipating discounts to be pretty competitive for apparel at 25%, appliances at 18%.
Adobe predicts $143 billion will be spent by consumers buying on their phones.
Rescue workers are helping hundreds of hikers trapped by heavy snow at a tourist camp on Mount Everest. The hikers were trapped at camps at an elevation of over 16,000 feet. Rescuers have been heading up the mountain, clearing paths to try to bring those down who got stuck in a sudden snowstorm. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
They say the more things change, the more they stay the same. And that's certainly true at the Phoenix Center. A longtime favorite in Richland County, it remains the go-to destination for bowling, great food, and lasting memories. It's where friends gather, laughs are shared, and good times roll, literally. Open every day at 11 a.m., the Phoenix Center continues to serve up favorites like their legendary pizza and friendly atmosphere. Call 649-7469 for more information or to carry out.
Are you looking for the perfect gift or a little sparkle for yourself? Pam's Fine Jewelry in Spring Green is a full-service jewelry store with a wide variety of styles to fit every occasion. From engagement rings to timeless keepsakes, our friendly and knowledgeable staff is here to help you find something special. Stop by today or give us a call at 588-2134. Pam's Fine Jewelry, where elegance and service shine.
A high of 64 today with occasional showers, a few rumbles of thunder possible. Showers ending late tonight, a low of 45. Tuesday, mostly sunny and pleasant, a high of 66. Wednesday, sunny and quiet and 64. Some patchy frost could happen in spots. Tuesday night and Wednesday night, Thursday's high is 67 and 70 on Friday.
WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is sponsored by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765 and learn how to buy a home without needing 20% down.
A funeral service can help us remember the person who died and share our unique memories with others, creating hope for the future. This is Nick Hodge of the Pratt Funeral Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet. Our goal is to allow families to create a funeral service that recalls good moments and special times. We also want you to have a service that allows healing to begin. We are always willing to help at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet.
Here is Jamie Gander of Badgerland Flooring.
We started our business in 2008. We named it Badgerland Flooring of Southwest Wisconsin, obviously. And then 6 years ago, we started doing kitchens, and we just want to really get the word out to people that we're doing those now as well. We have a showroom west end of the building is committed to kitchens. You know, we do bath remodels, vanities, countertops. You can do any type of flooring, walk-in showers, but we're really trying to let the public know we're doing a lot of kitchen nowadays, too.
See Badgerland Flooring in Richland Center for more information.
Whether it's your main hustle or your side gig, if you've got a business, you need the right coverage. Don't let one slip turn into a costly trip. Protect it with business insurance from Julie Karen State Farm. We offer a wide variety of policies that are thorough, reasonable, and backed by remarkable local service. From shops to farms, contractors to creators, we've got you covered. Call Julie Karen State Farm today or start a quote anytime at juliekarens.com. Business insurance made simple, local, and dependable. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
It's good to look into the windows you'll be looking out. The perfect place to look into new windows is PMI Windows of Lone Rock. PMI offers premium vinyl windows custom made to order with the latest advancements in glass and hardware technologies, fusion welded frames and sashes, and the industry's best lifetime no-nonsense transferable warranty. Windows are not all created equal. Let PMI custom tailor premium vinyl windows just for you. Call 583-7200 for a free estimate.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. Good morning and welcome to another solid week of morning shows. We have great guests all week long here on WRCO Radio. Kicking it off, the leadoff hitter is Mayor Todd Coppernall from the city of Richland Center.
Phil, how are you doing today?
Really well. I saw you on a float in the homecoming parade.
That was a lot of fun. A lot of credit, as so many things. The class of 85 is still vibrant with things like class reunions and high school related events. And a lot of our peers, that stuff's kind of fallen away, but not with us. And there's two reasons, and they are named Peggy and Penny. Maiden name was Wallace. Hello, Dale Wallace at Ash Creek. That's his two big sisters. And they've been into this from like 2 minutes after graduation, which is already 40 years ago. So every class reunion, every 5 years, they put them together, and they're wonderful. We still get a big turnout. And they decided this year they wanted to do a float in the parade because it's 40 years. And several of us showed up and just had a good time. None of us had obviously been in a homecoming parade since the 80s when we were in high school. And it was perfect. It was so much fun to just relax with friends and ride through town and see everybody on such a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. The weather was perfect. And we learned something, those of us who rode on that float. If you take a kid to a parade to get candy, you want to be on Central Avenue, because by the time everybody gets to Church Street, there were too many cute kids and they threw all the candy out. So by the time you get to the fire station, you know, you're down to like one Ohm and Joy, you know, to throw.
But it probably melted on Friday.
Yeah, oh man, Peggy and Penny had kept all of the chocolate. They brought it. They'd kept it on ice. And honestly, by the time we got to downtown, it was just squishy. It was really squishy. We were laughing at one instance that was just kind of funny. There was just a little boy. He maybe was two, kind of just old enough to sit up on a curb by himself, sitting there with what we would guess was his mom. And this was a really, really cute kid. And he almost looked posed. He looked so perfect sitting there, this cute little kid. So everybody was throwing candy at the kid, who didn't care. He never moved. He didn't pick any of it up. And his mom's got this bag full of candy in front of her that's about a foot tall. And I said, that kid's a prop.
But parents that, collecting money.
But that was fun. Candy. It was just a way to relax and have fun. And we saw, you know, I saw a class of 75 float and a class of 68 and all of these, a class of 55.
Yes.
All of this. And then, of course, today's high school kids out having fun. And I had a fun minute with Billy Jones, our police chief, actually, too. He said, you know, budget cuts. You know, I've been telling everybody for months the city budget was going to be tough with what we're dealing with inflation. And he said, you know, all that toilet paper in the trees, the police were going to maybe round it up and take it to the police station for further use. But they realized the kids were using one ply this year. And so they did.
Yeah. Put a couple plies together, maybe.
Just leave that stuff in the tree. Yeah, just a good time for people and multiple homecomings in the area. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun at some football games and all that goes with it. And then parades all around. The fall has been, it always is such a fun time with so many events and people running to the apple orchards and just the stuff you do. Pumpkin Fest is right upon us now. And it's a really vibrant time, in Richland Center, Richland County. And the weekend was a great example of it.
I know that you had a chance to go to the football games and enjoy all that stuff, certainly. And then we had the night parade on Saturday night, too. I heard it was well attended.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking about. You didn't get a parade. You got two in a row. I mean, there's a lot to do here. There really is a lot to do here. Events in the auditorium and around we go, right? You announce it all on the air all the time. And it's just become... we got to get something corrected, and I'm not sure what's missing. We're getting at a lot of events in town, things at the auditorium, things at the fairgrounds, just anything. We're getting more people that don't live here coming out than people who do live here. And then people will see me that were from whatever, Boscobel, Hillsborough. So, man, this was fun. And then, you know, a couple days later, somebody that lives here will either say there's nothing going on, or they'll say, well, when does that happen? And I'll say, well, 3 days ago. And I'm not sure that's, you know, the Starlight 14 is dealing with that. The Galaxy Skate Center is dealing with that, where we're getting people coming to town a lot more, it seems, maybe not, but it just sort of feels like more than we're getting our people out to what's right in front of them. And maybe that's human nature. Maybe that's why people in Spring Green and Dodgeville don't go to the House on the Rock. Mm-hmm. But people come from far and away.
We tend to take it for granted sometimes.
What you see every day.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of tight. People have been asking me about parks in the city. Why don't we have more? Well, why don't we have more is because we do have more. We actually have a lot more. And when I was a kid here, we had basically had Crosscut Park, and I think Strickland Park was up there. And so there were three ball diamonds in town then, just three. You remember that? Mm-hmm. The two church league softball diamonds and then a larger one, which was where the high school baseball and eventually girls softball when they added it. They played there, but because there were only three diamonds, the youth bases for like Little League and T-ball were actually cut into the infield. I don't know if you remember that, but second base, there was like a dirt cutout about halfway between the pitcher's mound and the second base for high school. That you just played high school ball on, okay, because there were only three diamonds in town. So there was no outfield fence. When you were a kid here then, to hit a home run, you had to hit it over the outfielder, and then it's an inside-the-park home run. You got to sprint because there was no fence to hit the ball over because there were three diamonds too close together to allow it. Well, since then, and by the way, nobody seemed to mind. Every kid in town that played baseball just rode their bike to the park. There'd be 70 bicycles parked in the park, and nobody questioned it, and no kid complained about it. It's just where you went to play ball, and it's where you went to use the swimming pool. The bike racks were always full. It's where you went to shoot hoops or to play tennis. It was the park. Crosscut Park was known as the park because it's what we had. That's why high school football happened there. So I talked to a group of high school kids a couple weeks ago. They didn't realize that the high school teams used to play at Crosscut Park. We've now been in the current high school long enough that the 16-year-olds didn't know that. And I said, that's why there's a scoreboard down there standing all by itself. And the reaction was literally, oh, yeah. So that's where we were, the park, and then Strickland Park. I can't remember any others. If I'm forgetting one, I apologize. Well, over the years, so we added North Park with its multiple ball diamonds and soccer fields. Okay, it's a big park. We added a soccer field on the east side of 80 North, which incidentally just went unused for 2 years for anyone who thinks we don't have enough soccer fields. The city just provided one for 2 years that no one signed up for. That's a fact. Okay, and then we added West Side Park. And I went up and mowed it myself over the weekend to those of you who showed her the pictures. You're right. And I don't know how that happened. And I will be talking to the parks people about it. Just figure out why that happened. It hadn't been adequately maintained. I agree. So I just took my walk behind up there in my UTV and mowed it myself over the weekend on Friday night. But it's up there. That park is there. And we did Old Mill Pond Park by the old community center on Seminary, which is probably just the eyeball test. That might be the busiest park we have. There's always people at that one. It's in a great location. There's a park down in Wedgwood. There's a shelter along Highway 14 East. There's an arboretum. There's a bike trail all the way to Lone Rock. None of that was here when I was a kid. And people went to the park. And kids rode their bikes from everywhere. I grew up the hill from TKS, all the way across town from Crosco Park. So what? Jeff Hillesheen came from Pleasant View Court on his bike. We'd meet at Ward and Sheldon and ride our bikes up to play ball, usually arguing about who the leadoff hitter was going to be because I wanted to do it, and he rode out the lineup card. But we just went there. And when I, you know, other kids from the neighborhood would join me, Carla Delameter, Julian Rod Dosh, Jamie and Tina Deco, Jeff Wilson, Kelly Sinichka, we'd ride our bikes to the park to use the pool. And it was across town, but it's just what kids did. You know, we just did. You don't see a lot of that now. So now we don't have a pool. We have an aquatic center and an indoor pool at the Simon Center. So we have an outdoor aquatic center and indoor pool. A trail network we didn't have. North Park we didn't have. An arboretum we didn't have. A shelter on 14 East we didn't have. A Wedgwood neighborhood with a park we didn't have. Old Mill Pond Park we didn't have. West Side Park we didn't have. They're all here now. And so actually the National Park Service says that, oh, we have a dog park too, by the way. Didn't have that either. The National Park Service says a city our size should have about 50 acres of recreational land, and Richland Center actually has 300. The city of Richland Center has six times the national average for parkland. No one can possibly defend the position that this city has not provided adequate parkland for its people to enjoy. It's simply an indefensible statement.
Well, that brings us to Story Field.
It does.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sounds fine. What would you like to know?
Well, it was brought up at the community forum. I know a little bit, but there's been a lot on social about it.
Yeah, there has. So here's the deal, and I've said this publicly multiple times. It's on video. Ben captured it, or actually Rod Perry did. And it's been circulated, too. The city's position. So the one kind of nice benefit in this scenario, which just happens to be when this came up, but it's tied in well. One of our older persons is Rachel Schultz, and Rachel served for many years as the school district administrator here, long experience, and has great working knowledge, among many other things, of the history of Story Field in the era since the current high school was built. And you will notice I didn't use the term new high school. People get lost in that. That new high school is 30 years old now. That's a 3-0. The first kids that graduated from the current high school are now in their late 40s, and it would surprise me if there are not some grandparents among them at this point. 30 years, a full, more than a generation, really, never attended the high school I went to, which, of course, was between, you know, 3rd and 4th streets off of Park. We know where it was for all those decades and multiple generations. And at that time, and thank goodness for it, Story Field served the school district as its athletic field. It was for track and field. The football practice field was up there. The cross-country practices, many, many of them started or took place there. I know that. I was on that part of that for 4 years. The gym classes, everybody, flag football, softball, archery, name it, everybody was up there. And the neighborhood just sort of also used it, which is fine. And why not? It's right there. So the kids played ball out there. They sort of made their own sled hill in the winter. You know, it was never designated any of those things, but nobody cared. Why not? Why wouldn't you do it? It's right outside. So people did. And I would too. You know, if I lived up there, I would have too. And then when Rachel just told me this in the last couple of weeks here, I wasn't living in town when the high school we now have was built. And in that whole era, I actually talked to Rachel, and I also had a long conversation, two of them now, with Larry Komorek, who was the school board president in that era when the high school came to be. And Rachel told me that Story Field was used for 6 years by the school district after the current school was opened because the athletic field wasn't ready to go yet. So 6 years would put you to 2001. And from that point forward, the school district really just moved on. And that can't really be argued either. I mean, ask the kids if they've ever been up there for a gym class. No, I haven't. Do you do any sports practices up there with your football team? Those things that the school district uses for? No, we don't. That kind of thing. It's just reality. So what happened, and it's nobody's fault. It's not a bad thing. But when the community voted in favor of replacing the high school, which was the right move, the old school was an old school. So they built the current school in a different area, because what were you going to do, tear down houses? No. So the community voted, and a school was built in the current high school location. And when it was, what is now called the Vitus Rip Field was constructed with a brand new track around it. Practice fields for football, practice fields and game fields for soccer, for softball. There's 7 or 8 athletic fields out there. If you start at the softball diamond and just keep going until you get to the soccer field on the end, 7 or 8. None of that was here then either, by the way. That's all out there. So anyway, because it just makes sense, when the school was built where the school now is, athletic fields were built where they now are. And what that means is the school district moved away from Story Field. And what it also means is the school district moved on from Story Field. They went to a new place. That's what happened. That's what happened. I think the first class that graduated was 1996. 1996. My 34-year-old was 5.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Everybody got that part? It's not a new development. It's not a bad thing. It was a really good, smart thing. The people that lived here finally because they'd been trying to get a new high school most of my childhood. They finally, we got to do it. And they did it. Well, would it have made sense to bus kids up to the old athletic field, which no longer had a school? It wouldn't. So they made sure there were athletic fields right outside the school, just like Story Field was right up the road from the old one. Okay, so the school district just sort of never made a plan, which I think maybe has led to some of the emotion that's come from the people who are opposed. And by the way, there are several people, many, who have reached out to elected officials expressing support for the project too. Whether some people want to hear that or not, it's absolutely true. But those who are opposed, I've used a great deal of empathy. I've allowed public comment at the last 2 city council meetings, which isn't mandated, but I did because it just made sense. People should be heard and people have feelings, and we all do. And I think they should be allowed to express those, especially to the elected people. And so they have. That makes a lot of sense to me. 2 open houses were held on this topic. You don't need me to tell you this. You can Google it. If you Google Story Field open house, you will find for yourself. 2 open houses were held in April of 2023. That's 2023. That's 2.5 years ago now. Letters were sent to that entire neighborhood inviting people down. That's also not a requirement. It's just something that we just thought makes sense. We're not against anybody. We want people to know what we're working on. That's why I do this show every month. And so we told the people we were working on it. We just didn't find a builder then. And we did now. One actually came back to us, not solicited. He came back to us, which is how we got here. Okay, so wrap that thing up about the school moving over and the athletic field moving over. The school district just kept mowing the lawn. They owned it. They had to maintain it. Well, as Rachel Schultz has told me, as the years went by, you couldn't even buy cinders for the track anymore. So the track disappeared over time. It's gone. And then she said a couple of people had tripped over the metal borders of the track, so they had to take them out. It's a liability issue. So that's gone. Well, the football team has a practice football field where it belongs, by the high school. By the football field they actually use, which is next to the practice field, which was never true at the old high school. It's actually more convenient all the way around. So the practice football field, you know, they don't paint the lines, the goalposts aren't used, so you can go up for yourself and see the rust on the goalposts. I'm not picking on anybody. I didn't say I like it. I'm just telling people what happened. Look at the pavement. See the cracks? That's because the school district wasn't going to spend money to maintain it because they weren't using it. Okay, the water fountain, when I was just up there, not only doesn't work, it was filled with bird droppings. Guys, the school district moved on from Story Field. the people who live there sort of came to kind of see it as theirs, in a sense. You know, it's right outside. It's wide open. The kids, maybe when they have free time, want to play on it. Maybe I'll go for a walk on it. Or maybe it's just nice to look at it. Again, I don't blame anybody for having those feelings. But that was there was never an intent. Maybe that's a problem here. The school district did not deliver an intent to the public of what they would do with it over the long term. They just mowed the grass, basically, because they had to, but, you know. So we tried, we meaning the city, to find places to build houses. And several landowners were spoken to and just basically, would you consider this or that? No. Others came down. Maybe I'd sell you this field. Well, when we looked at infrastructure costs to get water, sewer, and electric and a street in there, it's into millions, that's plural. It's just not there. So we tried to, you know, can you use tax incremental financing? Well, not really for that location. There's not going to be enough tax revenue. The state laws have changed. All of these things kept coming up. And so we looked at Story Field as a what if. We didn't own it. The school district did. So it's just a sort of out there what if, because we're checking all the boxes. We're going to find a place because we got to get housing. There you can, it's, I believe the link is still right on the city website. There was a study just done in 2024 by Southwest Regional Planning that details the housing issues here in town. It's not an opinion. It's there. I believe that link is still on the city website. And it just spells out why we have a problem here, which if you don't maybe serve as an elected official or work for the city or the county or one of the bigger employers, maybe you don't see it every day. But if you ask the hospital administrator, the Rockwell plant manager, the school district administrator, the Schreiber plant manager, the people like that, they'll tell you the challenges they have all the time trying to move people into town. They're real. You know, a lot of the people that own the apartment buildings in town will readily tell you they always have a wait list trying to get in. So in our attempts to address an obvious need for the community, Story Field was added to the list of possible options just as a maybe. So then I talked to Jared Burke, who was then running the school district here in town. This is before Steve Board assumed the position he's in now. It was Jared then. And I said, well, you know, what are you guys working on over there? And it was always about money. Referendum this is right in the era. They wound up closing Lincoln and Jefferson Elementaries and consolidating and going through all of that, which was no fun at all. And always thinking about money. And I said, well, we would like to put some houses on the hillside behind the campus buildings, but I don't know if that'll ever happen. There was a great deal of resistance to that, too. It was a similar experience. People that just didn't want that to happen where we said, don't put it there. Same thing. Really. And so we tried to do that and realized we weren't going to get access to the land. But I said to Jared Burke at the school district, I said, well, you know, you guys don't want to own Hive Drive because if there's ever repairs needed, things like that, a city is eligible for some grant money that a school district is not. So it might make sense if the city owned that so that the taxpayers wouldn't have as much to pay for if there was ever a need for improvement or repair on Hive Drive, that the grant possibilities are better for a city than schools. So we agreed, yeah, maybe we'll take that as a city street. And then if there is ever a day when we can put houses on the hillside, I don't mean where the campus buildings are, I mean behind that. If there is ever a day when we could do that, we'd have an access point. We'd have a city street that runs back there. So I said, what about Story Field? And he just, we don't have plans for it. And they didn't. So we ran it through the plan commission, ran it through the city council, and agreed to take Story Field and Hive Drive for a dollar. And that if we could find a builder, you know, the plan commission reviewed a plan that Veerbicker Engineering in Reedsburg did for us. Outstanding engineering firm. They've been around a long, long time. They went up to Story Field, looked at all the drainage underground, looked at all the neighborhood infrastructure, you know, what fits, where should it go, how much is too much, you know, how do you do it if you do it at all? And they came back to us with what they drew up, which the public has been shown multiple times. And that was the plan that an engineering firm drew up for us, that the plan commission and the city council both looked at, and the city council decided, yeah, let's see if we can find a builder who wants to do this. spring of 23, and we just didn't, because at the time, what we were looking at, the infrastructure costs were like $700,000 to $800,000. I'm doing that from memory. If I don't have the dollar amount exactly right, it's that range. To put basically the biggest expense, you got to put a road in, which is very expensive, like a strict cul-de-sac, and then you got to get the utilities in there. This is expensive stuff, and so builders didn't want to do it because of that. But that's not the only reason. They had other projects, but looking at the cost, they would want the city to pay that. Well, now you got to come up with almost $700,000, $800,000, whatever it was. So it just stopped things. We just didn't get a match. So we had another opportunity come to us in the fall of 23 that we started working on then, and we just stopped on Story Field. We just put it to the side. We didn't find a builder. We tried. We might have another opportunity. There's a builder standing right in front of us saying they have interest in another opportunity. Let's pursue that, common sense. So we did, and we just left Story Field alone because we didn't have a reason not to. There was nothing going on with it. And we just worked on this other project. Well, this summer, one of the builders we had approached a couple years ago called me unsolicited and said, hey, if you guys still own it, I've got an investor and we want to do it, which completely surprised me and everybody involved. We were not working that. And now we have this opportunity. And the key difference, one of the key differences is this investor has stated that he will pay for the infrastructure as part of the deal, which changes a lot of things because that infrastructure now, costs have only gone up. I would say $800,000 is a low number probably now. $900,000 is possible. I mean, I'm not a builder. I'm not going to put a hard number on it, but just assume, just call it $800,000. I can't imagine it would be less. To put all of that in there, to put the cul-de-sac in there, get the utilities right, and in the pre-development agreement, which I guess the best analogy I can give you, like an offer to purchase a house, it's not a done deal. It's, yeah, we intend to do it, but it's not final. It's like it's not a closing. All of that's in there. He has signed a document that states he would pay for all that. Okay, so to make the deal happen the way it's stated, he would get the land from the city for a dollar, which a few people have questioned. And then he would fund the infrastructure, which, again, I can't see it. I'm not a builder if I'm wrong. I'll own that later. I don't think I am. You're looking at $800,000 or, I think, more to put all that in. So I suppose we could have had the land appraised at city expense, taxpayer expense, and then said whatever it comes in at, whatever it is, $300,000, $500,000, whatever it is, that he's going to buy the land for that number. But I assure you, I mean, we've been through this. We've negotiated several deals and tried to get several others. The next move would be, then I want the city to pay for the infrastructure. We'd be right back where we were 2.5 years ago, which does not benefit the taxpayers, because all you're doing, if you do that, I don't know what the numbers would be, but let's use $500,000. Let's just use an easy number. $500,000 for the land. And the infrastructure is going to cost, I don't know this to be 100% accurate, $800,000. If he had $800,000 to spend on infrastructure, he's going to say, I will put $300,000 toward the infrastructure and I want the city to cover the other $500,000. So let's say he wrote a check for $500,000 for the land. It's just going to cycle around and be used for the infrastructure. It's musical chairs to get to the same place. This is not a bad thing. It was just the way it was written in this agreement, and the city attorney has reviewed this multiple times and insists that there's no legal issue here at all. I am, by the way, having a third party review all of this advice we've gotten from the city attorney. I believe Attorney Michael Wendell, absolutely, and the county or the public needs to be assured. There's no doubt that the city attorney oversees all of this stuff, provides oversight, advice, legal advice on all of this stuff. You can see him in the videos of every city council meeting, sitting immediately to my left. Nothing's happening that he's not sitting there listening to. And the documents that are prepared, you know, a pre-development agreement, a development agreement, you know, a city ordinance, a city proclamation, any of this stuff, he reviews before it gets signed. So, and he's done that. multiple times, actually, on this one, just to make it's a big project, just to make sure everything's right. And he insists that it is, but I am actually having someone else look at it to make sure we're right, just because there's no reason not to. Makes sense. So I just covered a lot of ground there. What I just told you is the city council voluntarily moved away from Story Field. 2001? You build a new high school that opens in the fall of 95. You use it for 6 years. Let's call it spring of 02. That's Rachel Schultz telling me that, not my opinion. And new athletic fields that anyone can see with a track and more fields than the city ever had. At the school, you don't need me to tell you, drive out there and look. I did. And you'll see them. And you won't see a high school in the neighborhood where one had stood for all those years. And you won't see a track team having events because there's no track. And you won't see a football practice because all of the football practice equipment is at the football practice field, which is at the high school, which is where it should be. So do I understand feelings? 100%. Do I have my own? Of course I do. I grew up here. I have wonderful memories, not just at Story Field, which there's many, but just in the neighborhood. That's where my high school was through my whole childhood. Man, I did a lot of crazy things with my friends that I still have to this day up there. So do I get it? Yeah. Does that mean the city should not pursue it? It does not mean that. And we don't have a lot of time left, so I'm going to go fast, but I got to get into this.
Well, what's the next step then?
Yeah, next step is it's up to the city council, as it always has been. The decision-making body for the city is the city council, which as it has always been, that's actually set by state law. Just like we have a state assembly and a U.S. Congress, we have a city council, we have a county board, we have a school board. They will decide. So there is a city council meeting tomorrow night. It is on the agenda. I don't know if they'll take action. It's up to them. If they do, what action they'll take, I don't know. It's up to them. But it's on that agenda, which, of course, is an open meeting, publicly posted. But the public needs to hear this. This is actually a lot more important than what we just talked about, believe it or not. Okay, so why do you see referendums left and right from every school district you've ever heard of, from cities now, counties are contemplating it? Why do you hear about, why was Baraboo $800,000 underwater last year trying to figure it out? Why was Reedsburg underwater last year trying to figure it out? Why did Dane County just again, they've repeated this message, state, they're $31 million upside down in their budget right now. They're going to leave 50 open positions unfilled. They've told every city, every county employee they will be taking a 1% pay reduction. Why is that? Because inflation went crazy. I don't have to tell you that. Buy anything, you already know. Inflation went crazy, okay? So state law, which is about 15 years old now, put tight caps, tight limits. To protect taxpayers, the intent of the law makes sense. The intent makes sense. Stop a local government from just running wild with property tax. So there's tight limits on what can be done without going to referendum. One issue that I have with the law, if you find yourself short on money to do street projects, as one example, you can borrow that money and put it on the tax roll and pay it back, which puts a bigger tax bump in a year than a simple tax increase would have ever done. And then the taxpayers are actually paying interest on debt, and that's allowed. And there's municipalities all around here doing it. This county's done it many times because they had to balance the budget. So the people don't know this. By the formula, by the law, the state provides. Year over year, headed into 2026, Dave Turk, who is the county board chair, just told me this on the phone last night. The tax levy available to Richland County from 25 to 26 actually decreased about $20,000. The county's being given less money to work with. The county's being given less money to work with. Do you think the bills went down? You know they didn't. So what does that do to the budget? It's a mess. At the county, at the city, at the schools, in the townships. People of Richland Center and Richland County, it's time for a new contract for the ambulance service right now, January 1st. For example, and if you live in a township or if you live in Boaz or Yuba, you might want to ask some questions real fast. The city's been told our contribution just for the ambulance service, a single item in the city budget, will increase $52,000 a year. That's if everyone who's been participating in Richland EMS stays in. If any township or village pulls out, there will be an additional increase asked for from everyone who stays in. $52,000 a year just to fund the ambulance service, which of course is a mandated service, a required service, as it should be. $52,000 a year. The city tax levy, as set at the state, increased $3,300. The city will have $3,300 additional available to pay $52,000 more for ambulance. That doesn't take into account fire, police, who did a new union contract just in last year. Don't blame the cops. Do not blame the cops. God bless the cops. They didn't do anything you wouldn't do. They didn't do anything they shouldn't do. They got a new contract because it was just time. $52,000 for one item in the budget. We get $3,300 increase in tax levy. I hope you heard that. So when you want to know why you might want to pursue net new construction that brings more money into the general fund, it's about every one of us. It's literally about the financial future of this city. That's no exaggeration. The same is true in any other city in the state. It's true of every county. It's true of every township. It's true of every school district. We're all saying, what in the world is this? State law must change to reflect what's happened to municipal budgets. That is an imperative. The math doesn't work. When your public safety budget overall increases more than $200,000 in a year, and that's not with frivolous spending. That's paying cops. That's making sure you can run an ambulance and get a fire engine out. Those things. When that goes up more than $200,000 and the existing law says, here's another $3,300, I shouldn't have to explain anything. You know that's not right. You know that's not fair. You know that's putting you in a bad position because your municipality will have these options. Cut things. They have to be things that aren't mandated. You can't cut, shouldn't. Can't cut streets. Can't cut fire. Can't cut police or ambulance. No kidding. Who would? What does that leave? Parks. You want more? How about having less? How about selling them off? How about not funding Simons anymore? No more physical therapy in the pool. No more anything else people do at Simons because that's elective in the budget for the city and the county. Ooh, can't do that. They don't have the money. Unless we go to referendum and raise your hand out there if you want another referendum. Do you want at the same time, because it's a distinct possibility, a referendum from your city, your county, and your school district all at once? And do you want to voluntarily raise your property taxes three times? You know you don't, and we don't want to ask you to. So the pressure needs to be put on the state. The pressure from everybody needs to be put on the state to get with the program, to recognize the reality of where we all are, which is that we are now working under a law that does not match what inflation did to municipal budgets. This is ridiculous. There is no way to make this math work to the benefit of the people who are paying the taxes, who fund all of this stuff. So stop getting upset about the things that you shouldn't be upset about. Start listening to where the numbers are and start understanding what put us all where we are. It is the state law that did it, that put us here. Quit dividing your neighbors amongst themselves and don't repeat things that you don't know to be true. Ask the people who do know. Ask the mayor. Ask the city administrator. Ask an older person. Ask the county board chair, the county administrator. Ask Clay Porter at the sheriff's department how his budget looks. Ask Billy Jones at the police station. You don't have to take it from me. If you want to know what's going on in your city or county budget, did you even know that they're a matter of public record and you can read the budget? You don't even have to ask me. Did you know that the meetings that decide the city budget are open to you? Doors wide open, publicly noticed. We've held two in the last 2 weeks. Do you know how many members of the public have attended those two meetings where your city council is trying to figure out next year's budget? Do you know how many members of the public came to either one of those open meetings? The answer is zero people came to those meetings. you might want to show up. You really might want to do it. I'm really trying to help. You might want to come down and ask some questions. You might want to look through what your older persons are looking through, because what you're going to find out is all they have are rotten choices. There's no yummy one. It's cut this, borrow money for that, or what? That's where we are. That's where this county's been for several years. Ask your school districts how it's going. You already know. But go ahead and ask them. Do yourself a favor and get yourself informed. And then you call Sarah Kieske, who met with me last week, or you call Tony Kurtz, who talked on the phone with me about 10 days ago, and tell them that what we're getting from the state doesn't work now. Because it doesn't. I believe Tony and Sarah both support some state changes. I really believe it. And there's a Republican and a Democrat in there. Hear that part too. Because I honestly believe they do support changes down there. But they have to have a majority. So it can't just be Richland Center. It can't just be Boaz. It can't just be the Driftless region that actually stands up and tells your state government to get with the program. It has to be the people all over the state of this, or the state of Wisconsin, because if we don't get enough people banging on enough state officials, we're not going to get the change we got to have. And if we don't get the change we got to have, you're going to see cuts to things that you're used to getting, and you're not going to like it. Or you're going to see a lot of borrowed money all over the place just to pay for things like street projects and infrastructure, things that you have to do. So please hear this. You can be mad at anybody you want, and you can take a shot at me anytime you want to take one, because I know what office I ran for, and I know the performance the city's getting from me. I have no problem with criticism. Let's go. But make sure you know what you're talking about. And the way you find out is showing up in meetings and asking questions. Or, hey, how about this one? Actually call me and ask me. 608-604-5399. Phil, thanks for having me on the show.
We appreciate it. You've made it clear on this program that this is your last term as mayor as well, which is a paid position, correct?
Correct. So I said first on the air here, May of last year. Anybody wants to look up the show, I'm sure it's online. It was my first show after the last time I was reelected. And I said, you said, congratulations. I said, thank you, Phil. This will be my last term as mayor. This was May of last year. I bet I've said it publicly 50 times. So yeah, mayor is a paid position. It is. The mayor is actually paid $9,600 a year. That would be $9,600. That's the total compensation. There are no benefits. Nobody does this for the money. An older person gets $4,800 and a mayor gets $96. Those numbers are set by the city council, not by the mayor. And those numbers are all, again, the budget is a matter of public record. So anybody can request to see this anytime, or again, come to a finance committee meeting right now. When you just look on the city website, all of the agendas and everything are right there. You can see when, where, how, what they're going to talk about. Come on down, listen to their discussion, ask them about it. Do it now before the budget gets done. They actually would welcome it.
All right, sounds good, Mayor Todd. Always good stuff.
Phil, thanks again, man.
Appreciate you and your transparency, and we'll be back with more coming up here in just a moment on The Morning Show. Mayor Todd Coppernall from the City of Richland Center, our guest during this first part of the show.
You're on the list for Macy's Fall VIP Sale. That means you're invited to save big on this season's top designer looks at prices you'll love, like an extra 30% off Calvin Klein, Steve Madden, Hugo Boss, and more. Plus, get 15% off beauty and fragrance from Estee Lauder, Lancome, and so many others. This only happens a few times a year. Don't miss the Fall VIP Sale today, only at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Saxonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family
Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Looking for a career where tradition meets opportunity? Join the legacy at Scott Industries, a proud family-owned business celebrating 75 years. They're expanding and hiring dedicated team members. No experience necessary. Just bring your enthusiasm. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 to 3 at 810 East Nebraska Street in Muscatine, or call 739-3171 to learn more. Scott Industries, a profit-sharing company where you can grow your career. Ready to buy your first home? Let Neighborhood Housing Services of Southwest Wisconsin be your guide. From expert advice and home buyer education to financial support and down payment assistance, we're here to walk with you every step of the way. Don't navigate the process alone. Let us help turn your dream of home ownership into a reality. Call 608-647-4949 today to get started.
Mike Brenninger is joining us on our morning show from WRCO Radio. He's been on in many capacities, but most recently as an author. You know, you've added that to your resume there, Mike.
How about that? I still can't believe that's true, but it is.
How's it been going? How's the Pulling Together book been received?
It's really well. In fact, maybe beyond my expectations, our publisher said he's shocked. It's, you know, selling thousands of copies, and he was surprised that it took off the way that it has taken off.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's kind of hitting a note with people. It's talking about working together and getting positive things accomplished, even across, or especially across ideological divides. You know, today it's the right, the left, fighting, nobody's getting much done. And this is kind of a solution to that. And the other thing is it's giving a lot of smaller communities hope, because if you just look and say, well, there's not much going on. And I don't just want to say Richland Center. I'm saying small town America is kind of experiencing this. We seem to be hollowing out. Our young people are leaving, you know, not much encouraging things happening in the community. And when it turns around and you start seeing those positive things happen, then people get excited about that. They want to see their communities thrive. And that's really the theme of the book. It's not like we've turned around thousands of places yet, but we hope that that is eventually what happens.
Certainly there are enough of them. And I think when people read those about what can happen in a community, they have to be inspired. Right?
Yeah, well, that's why we've got stories, testimonial type stories in the book of how it actually happened, you know, but that communities have been turned around, or at least projects, but a lot of times it's significant turnarounds in communities.
Well, you're going on tour. Tell us about that.
We've got a new Wisconsin tour, although one part of it goes into Upper Michigan, UP. But for the most part, it's a Wisconsin tour where it's a tour for the book. But we're also bringing in a special guest speaker, guy who's been working in this area for a long time. But let me just talk about the tour to begin with. So it starts in Viroqua, and then it comes to Richland Center, so October 8th. And then we travel down to Platteville, we'll be in Monroe, Waukesha, up to Green Bay, over to Appleton, Wausau Stevens Point, Chippewa Falls. So it's, you know, we're trying to cover a lot of the state with this. Now, we've already done, I don't know, 15 or 20 book launches in other places, but these are places that we're going with this specific tour and this guy from Nebraska named Jeff Yost.
So Jeff is kind of the difference between the book launch and what you're doing now then.
Right. So this is a book promotion, but it's not really a book launch. And Jeff Yost, I'm just going to give a little bit of his lowdown here. He's the president and CEO of the Nebraska Community Foundations. So he has, in Nebraska, he has about over 270 communities that he's working with all the time. He's set up community foundations. So there's people leaving money in these community foundations. Usually it's legacy money that is then being reinvested in the community, and they're generating all kinds of great ideas, and it's caused communities to turn around in Nebraska. some people might think, well, big deal, Nebraska, you know, they got less than 2 million people there. What do you? But in some ways, it's an amazing success story. So even though we've got three times the population in Wisconsin, we still face the same kind of decline in small communities that Nebraska does. And Nebraska has been able to turn that around. So this guy is a voice that is so needed, especially in rural communities. But his methodology, the way he's doing things, is really applicable to small communities, medium communities, and large communities. So he's going to be kind of the main headliner on this tour. In a lot of ways, the book will be a subtext, although there are some of the places that we're going to go that we will be doing workshops based on the book. So it'll be Jeff Yost presenting what's taken place in Nebraska, and especially talking about generational wealth coming down and staying in communities. And then we will do a workshop for pulling together and teach people how to make good ideas become a reality in their own community, how they can, you know, focus on some of the assets and resources they have, get people together and see amazing things happen. So that's kind of the focus of it. A few of the places that we're going, we've already been, but they asked us to come back. They said, please come back. We kind of got the ball rolling, but now we want to get it rolling faster.
That's a good sign, though, isn't it?
I'm just excited about that. That's much better than saying, yeah, thanks a lot, get out of here, and we hope we never see you again.
You know, a good place to start, I think, with some of these, you know, in some of the small towns, is focusing on things for the youth. You know, is that one of the things that they focus on? Because I think that's one of the things we can all agree on. We want the best for our kids, right?
Yeah, and that's really, most communities, smaller communities especially, but most communities in general, want to see their youth thrive. They want to see them love the community, and they want to see them consider staying in the community. So that is a special focus, both for Jeff Yost and for the Pulling Together book. It's like, how can we make a community attractive for young people to say, I'm going to plant my family there. We're going to grow in that community. We're going to spend our money at the grocery store. We're going to send our kids to the schools. We're, you know, we are part of that community. And the amazing generation of what happens when a single family stays in a community or comes to a community is quite, it's not just financial. You know, they bring all their talent, their resources, their energy comes with them. And so that is one of the keys to make a community alive, is something for the youth, not only to do, but to be interested in staying or coming back and raising their family there.
Sometimes it's wage disparity, though. You know, a lot of people, you know, you have a lot more money working elsewhere, but there are opportunities to work at home now that never used to be, too, right?
Okay, so a couple of years ago, I was out in California, and I saw the prices of things out there. I thought, my goodness, how can anybody live in this state? I mean, a gallon of gasoline back then, I think here it was maybe $3 and there it was $6. And that went across the board with everything. I want to say a big factor has to do with cost of living, which in rural Wisconsin is quite a bit less than it is in many places, even Chicago, New York, Portland, state of Hawaii, the state of Alaska. I mean, the wages are much higher there. The cost of living is so much higher. So we're proportional in that sense. We have a significant housing shortage right now, so our cost of housing is higher than it should be. We're hoping to see some correction in that. But I also want to say, along those same lines, you mentioned there are people now working from home. I know people that have moved to the Richland Center area from a large city that are making a lot of money, and they're doing all their work online, or nearly all of their work online. So one, we are such an attractive community for somebody like that. We've got, you know, clean, healthy environment, good education, low cost of living, wonderful place to live with close to zero crime. I mean, how could they ask for anything better? So places like Richland Center are super attractive. We just need to get marketing ourselves to people that are going to be interested in that. They're waiting to find a place like this.
Oh, it's interesting, and people can hear more about it coming up on the 8th of October. So tell me about the hours, where it's going to be and everything, Mike.
So we're going to meet at the Phoenix Center in their ballroom or banquet room, whatever it's called, their big room at the Phoenix Center, which is a really nice facility for this kind of thing. And we will meet at 11 o'clock on October 8th, which is a Wednesday, October 8th. And we will go till 1 o'clock. So, you know, hopefully for people that would normally take a lunch from maybe noon to 1 anyway, this just tacks 1 hour onto that. We will serve a lunch there. It's build a sub. People don't have to pay. We've already got somebody donated money to cover that. And so they will get to hear, they'll hear a little bit about the book, but they'll hear a lot from Jeff Yost and all the good stories of things that have taken place in Nebraska. And he will talk about how those took place and what could be done in communities in Wisconsin to reproduce that. We'll have question and answer time, and there'll be lots of interactive participation. So people can walk away saying, oh, I could do something about this. This is real for me. So that's from 11 to 1 o'clock on Wednesday the 8th, and we would love to see people come to that. It will be, I think everybody that comes will be encouraged. They'll see this is hope for places that maybe they didn't think had hope before.
Is there a cost, Mike?
There's no cost at all, which is amazing. Like I said, we got, okay, so Jeff Yost, this is amazing, but he said, I want to come to Wisconsin to do this so much, I'm going to cover the cost myself. So we're not paying for Jeff to do this. I can't even believe that.